Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
A manhunt in Maine following the deadliest U.S. shooting this year. Plus, United Auto Workers and Ford Motors strike a tentative new labor deal.
So the most recent public proposals that we've seen from Stellantis and GM aren't too different from what Ford agreed to. So we are expecting them to follow suit relatively quickly.
And the Israeli military carries out its biggest incursion into Gaza since the Hamas attack. It's Thursday, October 26th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. A shooter in Lewiston, Maine has killed at least 22 people in what has become the deadliest mass shooting in the U.S. this year. The shootings began shortly before 7 p.m. Wednesday evening at a restaurant and a bowling alley located several miles apart. Authorities are still on the hunt for a person of interest, Robert Card, who, according to a law enforcement bulletin, is a trained firearms instructor. Here was Maine's Public Safety Commissioner, Mike Soshuk.
We have literally hundreds of police officers working around the state of Maine to investigate this case, to locate Mr. Card, who again is a person of interest and a person of interest only. And we'll continue to gather information so that we can bring the suspect to justice and ultimately seek prosecution down the road.
A shelter-in-place order in Lewiston is in effect, and residents in neighboring Lisbon, Maine have also been asked to shelter in place because the vehicle police are looking for was located there. Now to Detroit, where the United Auto Workers have secured a new tentative labor deal with Ford Motor, potentially ending a six-week strike at the automaker while negotiations continue at General Motors and Chrysler parent Stellantis. Our Keith Collins spoke to Journal Automotive reporter Nora Eckert shortly after the deal was announced.
So the union came out earlier this year with some pretty lofty demands. They were asking for a 40% wage increase, the return of cost of living adjustments, and a quicker progression from the lower wage to top wages for factory workers. When we look at the tentative agreement that they've now secured, and this is still subject to worker approval, they got a 25% general wage increase. So pretty significant, much more significant than recent contracts. So in the past, UAW factory workers could earn up to around $32 an hour. Now they make up to about $40 an hour if this deal is approved by members. And they also speeded up the progression to reaching that top wage. It used to be 8 years, and now it's at 3 years.
So what are the expected next steps?
So the next steps in the process are the UAW has a specific Ford Council that has to approve this tentative agreement before it's sent out to the broader workforce for a vote. However, workers have been called back to the job in the voting process, so that's a key difference. And the UAW has said that that is going to put pressure on GM and Chrysler parent Stellantis, which remain on strike. So while Ford ramps up its operations, there's increased pressure on these automakers that still have factories down because of the strike to reach a tentative agreement.
And is there any suggestion that this Ford deal could lead to agreements between the union and the other automakers?
Yes, so the most recent public proposals that we've seen from Stellantis and GM aren't too different from what Ford agreed to. So we are expecting them to follow suit relatively quickly. And GM and Stellantis said they're committed to reaching a tentative agreement as quickly as possible and that they want to get their factories that are out on strike back up and running. But this whole bargaining process has been very unusual, so we don't really know what to expect next. But as we're looking at the core economics of these deals, not a huge difference from what we see at Ford versus where GM and Stellantis are standing.
That was automotive reporter Nora Eckert speaking to my colleague Keith Collins. Staying with the auto industry, several major car makers have opened up their books this morning. South Korea's Hyundai said that Q3 net profit more than doubled from a year earlier, while Mercedes-Benz's profit and revenue hit the brakes amid softening consumer demand. Zoom in on EVs, and the picture gets more complicated. While Mercedes and Hyundai said that sales of fully electric cars were on the rise, some analysts have warned that global EV demand may cool in the coming months. So what is a car company to do? The Journal's River Davis caught up with Toyota chairman Akio Toyoda, a longtime proponent of car makers hedging their bets on EVs with hybrids. River, Akio Toyoda told you that people are finally seeing reality on his strategy. Just remind us how Toyota has bet on hybrids and how that's pan off for him.
Yeah, so Toyota pioneered hybrid vehicles globally in the late 90s when it was the first automaker to commercialize a very successful hybrid vehicle, which was its Prius. And in the decades since then, it's really dug its feet in when it comes to hopping past hybrids to pursue fully electric vehicles. And a lot of that is because hybrids have been selling really well for Toyota. It has pretty decent profit margins on hybrid vehicles and much lower profit margins when it comes to electric vehicles. So the incentive to make that big switch is not really there at the moment. There's been pretty significant interest in hybrids. In the first three quarters of this year, hybrid sales increased 48%, and Toyota's head of North American sales said that the market was smoking hot and that the company was just creating as many of these vehicles as it possibly could. So Toyota keeps hybrids very central to its strategies, which some critics say is actually inhibiting it from moving more quickly into electric vehicles.
All right, a strategy then that is not without risks, but which it seems has been somewhat vindicated, hedging on EVs when competitors went full steam ahead.
Yes, absolutely. The last time I spoke with Akio Toyoda was actually in Thailand at the end of last year. And at that time, he said that he was exhausted because he felt like he had been repeating the same message over and over and over again, that there are challenges when it comes to EVs. And so over the past year, we've actually seen pretty significant challenges emerge. There's weakening demand in the US. There's pretty intense price war that's happening in China right now. Last week, we saw from GM, it was pushing back the timeline for a pretty central electric vehicle factory. And just days before that, we had different news from Ford that it was considering cutting a line to produce one of its central electric vehicle trucks. And so speaking to Toyota again, he did give off a sense that he feels that his view has really kind of materialized a year later.
That was the Journal's River Davis in Tokyo. Meanwhile, two consumer goods giants are offering us a snapshot of inflation and price sensitivity among shoppers this morning. Danone and Unilever both reported a drop in sales volumes as higher prices hurt consumers' spending power. The CFO of Unilever said that European shoppers are under pressure from inflation and that even the strong U.S. consumer is starting to show signs of caution. Those economic concerns will be front of mind as the European Central Bank announces its latest rate decision today and when investors digest U.S. GDP for the third quarter. For more on that, tune into the PM edition of the podcast this evening. And Facebook parent Meta has reported its largest quarterly revenue since IPOing more than a decade ago, with an advertising rebound powering a 23% boost in sales compared to a year earlier. While CEO Mark Zuckerberg has called 2023 a year of efficiency and laid off thousands of staff, he said on an earnings call that big investments are coming next year.
AI will be our biggest investment area in 2024, both in engineering and compute resources. But I want to avoid allocating a lot of new headcount. So we're going to continue deprioritizing a number of non-AI projects across the company to shift people towards working on AI instead.
Coming up, as Israel conducts a raid into northern Gaza ahead of an expected ground invasion, we'll look at the growing economic risks of a regional crisis. That and more after the break.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
The The Israeli military has carried out what appears to be its biggest incursion into Gaza since the Hamas attack on Israel on October 7th. The Israel Defense Forces said soldiers struck a number of targets but had since left northern Gaza, adding that the mission was part of preparations for the next stages of combat. The expected ground invasion of Gaza has already raised widespread political concerns amid suggestions it could prompt a regional conflict in the Middle East, and it is now dampening economic outlooks, too. Journal correspondent Stephen Kalin has been attending Saudi Arabia's Future Investment Initiative gathering in Riyadh this week, and I asked him what business leaders and central bankers have been saying about the economic risks amid the specter of war.
Yeah, it really only took a few minutes before the war in Israel and Gaza was mentioned. And once it was mentioned, it came up repeatedly. The conversation with the World Bank chief and with the heads of major U.S. and foreign banks and investment funds, and they kept on referencing this major geopolitical risk and a sort of fear of what it might mean for the global economy if this conflict extends for more than just a couple of weeks that we're at now. There's a sense of how bad is this going to get? Is this going to be as bad as, for example, 1973, when Israel repelled an attack by Arab states who then protested U.S. support for Israel by imposing an oil embargo. So Larry Fink spoke out and encouraged the other business leaders at the conference to speak out against what's happening, to speak out against terrorism and war. And he sort of drew this connection between what's been unfolding in Israel and Gaza, suggesting that it will spark more terrorism and insecurity around the world, which will increase fear in societies around the world and reduce hope. And he sort of said, when there's less hope, we see contraction in the economies. The fact that it was on his mind and on the minds of some of his peers spoke to the fact that while it is largely business as usual, the war is on the minds of people here.
And Stephen, the hosts of this conference, the Saudis, are themselves facing a major decision about whether to keep pursuing a normalization of ties with Israel. We heard from President Biden last week in his speech to the nation saying he wants to see the Middle East turned into some sort of regional cooperative economic area. What of that? Has that come up? And do we know whether the Saudis are likely to continue with their plans?
Yeah, you know, Jamie Dimon, actually, from JP Morgan, brought this topic up explicitly in one of the sessions and referenced that this conflict has the potential to roll back what just a few weeks ago was momentum towards a Saudi-Israel normalization deal. And he's urged the Saudis not to let this conflict derail those efforts, which he said were key to bringing peace to the Middle East. So it's clearly on his mind, and it will be front and center for the Saudis.
All right, so the Saudis not speaking directly to this, at least so far, but do we know where they and where other regional leaders are likely to land on all of this, whether they pursue, if we could call it, peace through economic cooperation, or if ideological divisions could deepen?
I don't think much has changed in terms of the ideological alignment that existed a couple of weeks ago, which was driving Saudi Arabia towards, if not normalization with Israel, then at least deeper economic integration. Those interests are still largely aligned. But what's happened in the past couple of weeks is the conflict has brought back to the surface the Palestinian issue in a way that is really unavoidable, given the death toll in Gaza and how Arab audiences are viewing this and being very upset by what they're seeing. It just puts another obstacle in front of governments like Saudi Arabia from pursuing that sort of integration. But I think we can be reasonably sure that the integration path that we were on is going to at least be extended.
That was Journal foreign correspondent Stephen Kalin in Riyadh. Stephen, thanks so much for the update.
Yeah, good to be with you.
The Mexican resort city of Acapulco has been left without power, communication, or access after Category 5 Hurricane Otis slammed into the port with 165-mile-per-hour winds, causing widespread flooding and destruction. Forecasters were caught off guard by the record speed at which the storm intensified, with Otis considered the strongest hurricane to hit the eastern Pacific coast in history. The judge in Donald Trump's civil fraud trial has unexpectedly called on the former president to testify about comments that he made during a break in proceedings. Trump was filmed accusing the judge and a person beside him of being partisan, which Judge Arthur Engoron took as a reference to his law clerk and fined Trump $10,000 for the comments. Trump's lawyers have protested the sanction. And FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried is expected to take the stand today to testify at his criminal trial. Bankman-Fried's attorney told the judge presiding over the case that they would present three witnesses and that their client would testify after the prosecution rests earlier today. And that is What's News for Thursday morning. Today's show was produced by Mohsen Ali and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.